PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
And we are back, ladies and gentlemen, once again with a brand new episode of Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards, and with me this week is Cody Reeder. He is an avid THPer. You might have known him as Envy Golfer on the site if you do spend any time on there. However, he does have a fresh new handle, which is Templeton. Cody, what's up, man?
What's up, Dan? Thanks for having me on.
I think it's awesome that you could get on today. You and I just finished at the Mizuno Experience, part of a big THP event that took place with obviously Mizuno Golf THP and happened down at True Blue in Caledonia in Myrtle Beach. What did you think of that?
Oh man, that was one of the best events, best times I've had in a long time. I can't really think of anything that compares to it as far as golf related or even kind of life related as far as fun, but because it was awesome. A ton of fun.
There is so much to talk about after a weekend full of craziness between the heat, the Finn scooters, the Shirley Temple tens that were ingested. But I do want to kind of help the listenership get an idea of who you are, where you're from. Sure. Can you share like the amount of golf you played in your life? Maybe what you play to, where you're from, where you play.
Yep. So I live in Reno, Nevada. I grew up in this area, a small town just outside of Reno. It's where I grew up. I started playing golf in high school back as a freshman back in 1994. So a while back. I started playing golf mainly because, it's kind of funny when I met James Miles, another friend of yours there at Caledonia and True Blue. He and I,
friend of off course too. Yeah.
Yeah. Friend of off course. He and I seem to have a very similar background. He played football. I played football. He was a wrestler. I was a wrestler in high school. So after playing football and wrestling for two seasons, I was beat up and tired of running and doing burpees and, you know, all that physical effort, but I still wanted to do something. And so I was like, oh, let's try this golf thing. And I was instantly hooked. Honestly, probably became my favorite thing to do then, even though I kept playing football and wrestled. And I wrestled in college for a little bit. And then, yeah, I've just been playing golf ever since. It's been my drug of choice, I guess you could say.
Yeah, and a good one at that. So here's the quick and dirty from my side of things. Cody's a big boy. He clearly enjoys more time in the gym than I do, which means he puts a healthy move on the golf ball. So I was a little bit envious of that. But we played, 36 holes together? Is that the number?
That sounds right. It was no more than that. It was like, I guess we didn't quite finish the two practice rounds. So,
oh, right. Yeah. We went back to back. That's right.
We went back to back and then we played another 18. So not quite, three rounds, but pretty close. Call it three.
So there are a couple guys here locally who go, Dan, what'd you hit there? And I would say my number. And then they'd pick a club that kind of, best suits them. Let's say it. We were going toe to toe there for a little bit. And it was kind of stressing me out because I was like, man, this guy hits the ball really good. And then you went up and hit driver, and I hit driver like a 50 handicap right now. So it doesn't really equate to anything valuable. But so we got to experience True Blue in Caledonia, which have a really long history for anyone who's on THP as a community member. There's been a number of events that have occurred there over the years. If memory serves me, this is one of or the only trip you've made to the East Coast to play golf. Is that true?
Yep. First and only so far.
I was going to say first and only, like never going back.
No,
dude, so far. It was so humid. It was nuts. And you're coming from Reno. So the way you described it to me is, and it's an evaporating heat.
Yes, very much so. I mean, we had the same high temperatures here. We get in the, it's been 2 months in the low 100s. But you go outside and you start to sweat and you can feel yourself sweat, but you can almost watch the water, the sweat dry out as you're walking around. And by the end, like I told you, you end up a salt lick, not this sweaty mess.
So that had to have been a weird change for you then, because you went from never really having to worry about your clubs slipping out of your hands or anything like that to now. I mean, me personally, just coming from Ohio, we get humidity here, but I felt like every time I did anything, I had to wipe my hands with a wet towel, then with a dry one, and then I had a hot chance of actually holding on to my club when I swung. That had to have been crazy for you.
Super crazy, and was super nerve-wracking before I even went, because my entire life I've played gloveless. Well, I played a couple years when I was a kid and younger at where playing a glove, but I got tired of buying them and having them blow out. So I just stopped wearing a glove for 20 something years. Well, after getting picked to come to this event and knowing it was going to be humidity, I started playing with the glove, trying to think, okay, I'm going to get there and it's going to be humid. It's going to be wet. And I don't want this, you know, club to come flying out of my hand and make a fool out of myself. So I started playing with a glove in hopes that it would become normal by the time this event came around and be used to it.
So that's a serious pre-game. I've never really thought about doing anything like that, but that is, you're going out of your way to change that. That's interesting. How was it? Was it weird?
It was really weird at first. And I almost abandoned it a couple times, but then I just kind of forced myself to keep doing it. Because mainly only for the biggest reason, I didn't want to make a fool out of myself and have some club go flying. Not necessarily that I thought it was going to change my game or help my score. I just didn't want that incident of a 5-iron flying down the fairway into a lake.
So here's the real question. Does it continue now that you're home?
That's a good question. I think so. I think so. I think it's probably going to continue. Now I probably switch to where now I'm going to have, next time I go to try and play, I'm trying to take a glove off and I'm going to feel strange now, because it's been, I don't know, since February this event was announced. And so I've been playing with one since then. So I'm probably converted at this point.
Yeah. I mean, I can't imagine not playing with a glove on. It's like that weird confidence booster. And it's not like I sweat a ton in normal climates where it's not like, I don't even know how to describe it. I think I said it was like hanging out in a wet blanket while in the desert, yet getting sort of rained on by like wet. I don't know. It's just, it was something else. And I talked to my wife about it just this evening. And I said, it wasn't what I expected it to be, because from a heat perspective, I've been too hot before. There's no question in my mind. We'd get simply hot here in Ohio too. I never really felt that way there unless we were like baking in the sun, which didn't happen that often. It always just felt like the moisture, the humidity was like the bigger story. Like, yeah. It just trying to maintain that and deal with it was so much worse than anything the sun could have done to us that day, those days.
I mean, if anybody's ever been in a steam room, yeah, that's what it was like. It was being right in a steam room for 6 hours. And it was the worst when you weren't moving. Like when you're standing on the tee box waiting for it to clear, and then you just start to collect moisture and it keeps collecting. And then you start to see it drip off the bill of your hat because your head is sweating so much.
Right.
So it was wet.
That's not the only significant change for you though, right? Like going from where you play, and then definitely in some of the other areas you play that have higher altitude, you're moving down to sea level at this point. Was that a challenge for you?
Not as big as much as I thought it would be. I've got living here in Reno, California is not far, so I've played at sea level pretty regularly, because it's only about 2-hour drive to go over the hill to sea level in Sacramento area. So that wasn't too far off. But definitely the travel and the humidity, I think all of those things kind of combined into a perfect storm of uncertainty when hitting the ball, especially the turf, which
I was gonna ask you about that. I mean I'm everyone knows my thoughts are in Bermuda. It can all just go away tomorrow, and that's great for me. And this time around was no exception to the rule there, but I'm curious from what you're used to coming to, because you play on some form of, don't you?
Of Bermuda?
Yeah.
No, I've never seen Bermuda until this weekend.
Really?
Never.
Okay.
So it's all like bent grass or rye type grass out here. I have never seen Bermuda.
Interesting. So what were your thoughts? Because I'm hyper biased is the worst thing ever. So
I know from what I remember, your biggest complaint is on the greens, correct?
Oh, 100%. And I don't mean that. I think the greens are more of an equation to solve. And because I've always been one of those putters that I don't travel well location to location, even if it's the same grass, because I'm very reliant on speed. I don't deal with change well from that perspective. I don't know if it's the style of stroke I have or whatever it is. But obviously, in any form of grass, when you add a variable like speed, or in Bermuda's case, grain, you have to change not only the speed at which you putt it, but the direction and amount of break that you call for. So I get very much in a groove where I play. And I think maybe like if I stay there for another 6, 7, 8 years, I'd finally get it dialed in. But, you know, that I think that was the biggest challenge for me. At least with the fairway lies, you kind of get an understanding that it doesn't compress the way that you'd expect something like bent grass to. Not to mention it can get pretty firm out there too, which obviously changes it all together again, because now you're hitting off that sort of hard pan. But what's it like for you, man? What did you experience down there was different?
The biggest thing I noticed, I didn't really notice much trouble putting. I felt like I actually putted really well this weekend. Maybe Bermuda on the greens suits me more, that, you know, I can either see the break more or the putts break less or whatever, something happening there that I felt like I putted really well and made some pretty good putts there. For me, it was with the wedges. Hitting short irons off that stuff was a bit of a challenge. I hit a lot of fat shots.
Yeah.
Where the turf would just explode. And I just couldn't quite figure out how to compress the ball and hit it clean and hit the yardage I was looking for. I kept on just hitting a lot of fat shots. And I don't know if that's because, you know, the turf here is, I typically play on very firm turf out here. Mm-hmm. And so I typically play pretty low bounce too. I don't know if that turf would require for me to use, or would be better suited to use more bounce on those type of clubs, or what, or if I just needed more practice on it. And, you know, but it's definitely something, like, I think we talked about, that made me want to do that more, you know, travel more, play different types of conditions, and learn to play different types of golf that you just never see before, just because you haven't been there.
Well, that's the fun part, right? Is that you get to see the different style of course architecture, different types of grass, obviously changes the profile in total. I mean, here in the Midwest, you don't get to see that sort of marshland presentation, the trees, the moss hanging out of them, things like that. It's just super cool. I think that's one of my favorite parts of traveling, is you get these sort of visual cues, and depending on the state or location you choose to go play in, that's just so different from home. And it's kind of appealing because it's fun. It's new. It's different. Yeah. Is there something about golf where you are that you would say is kind of a staple of the area?
Where I'm at, the staple here is mountain golf. I'm only 30 minutes from Tahoe, and there's a lot of courses up there on the mountain. And that's the challenge there, is kind of the opposite of going to sea level. Like if you came up here, I mean, we talked about it, you have that Franken 3-iron that you hit. I mean, and you hit that thing off the tee. I think if I remember right, you were hitting that thing like 250-ish.
the Tour Edge, the C721.
Yeah.
So
that's like your 250, 260 club ish, if I remember right.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking with that thing, you got 30 more yards here. You
know, that's crazy.
Off the tee. Like, especially because you get up at Tahoe, you're at like 7,500 feet. And so you get up there in the trees and lots of elevation, and there's lots of elevation change. So the challenge there becomes like unknowing. It's the drastic opposite of going to sea level. Sea level, you go down, you're like, okay, I'm losing 10%. Well, here I'm gaining 15 or something like that. So you could be hitting a pitching wedge 165 yards or something like that.
The true internet golfer numbers.
Yeah. So if anybody that wants to be an internet golfer, move to Reno, because then your numbers will be legit. You know. And if you're like Jamie Sadlowski came here, he's bombing it 400 yards with a 5-wood. So
yeah. Oh, he's been on the show. I had a good time. He did not tell me that story. I think he's probably a little bit tired of telling the bomb and gouge stories of his world. But I'm super interested coming out and playing out there. I haven't done a lot of desert golf or mountain golf, really. There's been a couple of opportunities to play where the mountains are in the background, in more of like the Palm Springs area. But I haven't had I'll call it the thrill of getting up to the big boy elevation and just giving it a rip. That sounds like fun, man.
Yeah, you need to come out here sometime, and we'll go play up at Tahoe, and you'll probably be just as frustrated in a different way. You're like when you're flying greens by 20 yards, you'll be like, "What the heck? I hit a pitching wedge there, and it went 200 yards." You know,
right.
Something like that.
At least I don't have to pull driver right now, so that'd be good. Let's cycle back to Trubu in Caledonia. I think anyone who knows Myrtle Golf would know that they're pretty high up on the list of places that must visit. They're pretty much neighbors down there. You go across the street at one. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we stayed at the villas at True Blue, which is super fun as always, including the night golf we did.
Yes.
Or I suppose night chipping.
Yeah, night chipping with our phone lights.
Right. Between True Blue and Caledonia, what's the one you'd go back and play if you could only play one of the two?
I think I would play True Blue again.
Really?
Hold on.
I want to preface something here. I actually drove you to the Charleston airport after our weekend and had this exact question for you. And you said you preferred Caledonia.
I do prefer Caledonia.
So you've been dwelling on this all week.
I have. Well, here's why.
Okay.
Caledonia reminds me more of golf here in Reno. It's up in the Tahoe. You got tree lined fairways, fairly tight, fairly kind of specific on how you have to play the shot. The hole really kind of dictates to you how to play the hole. In a lot of ways, there's not a whole lot of options. So that felt more familiar. And I think I play, even though it's the harder of the two courses, I played better than their both rounds. Like I felt like I hit the ball better and played better there, the two rounds we played there. That, which is why I want to go back and play True Blue more. I felt like the turf there, the conditions there, I struggled and I want another shot at it.
It seems like True Blue is a second shot golf course, and that's what I play on here locally. And it's funny because I've always kind of leaned into True Blue as my favorite. In fact, I had the opportunity to buy a straight down shirt, and shout out to their quality. They had them at both golf courses, and I was like, I want the True Blue logo, not the Caledonia logo, and only because I had to pick one. Because I feel like True Blue is just a lot more relatable to the kind of golf I'm familiar with here. And man, I don't know. I don't look at Caledonia like a challenge to beat. I love that golf course. It's super fun to go around, but True Blue just feels comfortable. You know, it feels, especially when you're going to have a great time. And, you know, we played some practice rounds there and had a blast. And actually that's where you and I rode together, was on True Blue. It just seems like, and I guess everyone's out there for a different thing. To test yourself, sure. But if I had to pick one to go with my boys and say, let's just go have a great time, it'd have to be True Blue. I think it would be.
I agree with that. It's definitely more golfer friendly, especially more, I guess you could say, new golfer or less avid golfer friendly. Mm-hmm. Like you could take a buddy that has played, you know, plays once or twice a year to True Blue, and he's not going to get too frustrated because he can struggle off the tee a little bit and still be in play, and not be hurt too bad by being a little off with a driver because it's a little bit wider off the tee, and you create your own problems there by missing greens that are the greens get tricky and they got some little bit of you know, subtle elevation change there that's kind of hidden overall.
Yeah, a couple of the par threes, sure. Yeah.
Yeah, par threes. So yeah, you definitely create your own problems there, which makes it easier for golfers because you can, if you're playing with somebody that's not familiar, you can say, hey, well, hit it over here and you're going to be, you won't have any trouble.
Yeah.
You know, just play smart over here and then you only have, you know, 150 yards in. You don't need to hit driver here, you know, which is nice.
Like on number eight, where you blind drive the hole, or be like Vosh and hit it, you know, 20 feet from the pin into the bunker and make a four. So... But yeah.
I didn't see that. I just remember seeing him hit his drive and saying, is that the line?
Yeah. Like, yeah, it's an ugly line. And I can't do it. I don't know what it is about blind tee shots, but you put a blind tee shot in front of me and I'm less likely to hit out of my shadow than I am to do anything useful. But there's one other element that I need to talk about, and this has kind of been an eye opener from that alternate form of travel when you get onto a golf course that I really didn't think much of. I always said I'm a walker. I would love to push. I'll ride if it's worth it and people like music and we have a good time. There's another option that I gave zero respect to up until this weekend, and that is the Finn scooter, the Finn squad. We have 2/3 of it here with us tonight. I guess you could say Friday morning. How much fun was the Finn scooter?
So much fun. I was like you. I saw them and thought, I don't really give it too much stock. But that was the most fun round, and it would have probably been the most fun round in carts, but the scooters made it another level. It was so much fun.
So if people aren't familiar out there with what Finn scooter is, it's kind of like a hybrid between a motorcycle looking thing and a scooter, which is probably why they're called Finn scooters. And you basically shove the golf bag between your legs, and there's a carve out where the handlebars are that it just sits, rests perfectly comfortable. And then you just get up and go. You just rip on this thing. You can pretty much take it wherever you want. It's nowhere near as impactful as a golf cart would be on the golf course, which means we were getting pretty tight to the greens, pretty tight to the tee boxes. We had Chris Voschall from Mizuno ripping around on one with us. And yeah, I mean, I'd seen like golf boards and some of those weird golf bikes and things like that, but for some reason, as soon as we saw it, and it was mostly on Vosh for taking one out for the second nine we played on that Saturday, I was like, man, I have to do this. It is so fun. And I'll tell you what, dude, we played in a competitive round, competitive match, and I had a blast the whole time. I was riding with you guys. I was riding with Stryker, my guy. It felt different from that regular round of golf.
It definitely did. It was like walking. All the benefits you get from walking, where you can go right to your golf ball, very much a lot of freedom, but this added an element of speed to it. I don't know how fast they were going. I'm guessing somewhere in the 15 ish mile per hour range.
Let's say fast enough.
Fast enough. Yeah. Like the first couple of holes, you definitely felt like it was fast. And then after a couple of holes, you felt like it was slow because you're like, now I'm ready to tear things up a little bit.
Right.
But I think the stigma for them is that it takes the camaraderie out of the game because you're no longer sitting in a cart next to somebody. Well, we were riding right next to each other, and then we would all three ride to one golf ball, all three ride, you know, or all three go to our golf ball, wait for someone to hit, and then that person would ride up to the next person, and then we'd all hit together. I think it elevated the camaraderie because it was so much fun.
Well, you stack the conversation. So now instead of it being two guys, it's three guys or four guys or whatever it is. And it never seemed like that transition between grouping up and going to the shot. We are definitely never behind pace. And I think that's a big conversation out there is, does it maintain pace? And even with the conditions we had where we were kind of rolling together, which is, I think, the only way to do it, it never seemed like we were getting behind based on the style of play we had. And there was a conversation on the THP forum talking about how someone felt definitely like it separated them when he had done it, but he didn't do it the way we had described, because you were on there explaining how you did it as well. I mean, I got videos of you guys hanging out in the bushes together, having fun. I've got, video of you guys ripping down the fairway together. I mean, it's all there, and you just have to, find a way to have a great time with it. I want to draw a comparison and ask you directly, have you tried any of the other forms of alternate transportation while on a golf course?
I have. I've done the golf board. There's a course here in Reno that has the golf boards. They have 10 of them. And this is kind of one thing that I would be interested in seeing for Finn Scooter overall. Because at this course that has a golf board, there's no additional cost for the golf board.
But really?
There's no additional cost. You pay your cart fee and you just say, hey, I want to take the golf board. And you're out. But they only have 10 of them. So you have basically you have to get one of the first 10 tee times in the morning, or wait, plan it out to where those guys are finishing their round or they're gone. I think I've only used it one time, and I've been to that course a bunch of times, and they're always out. And so I think they do it right. But when I played, I usually go play solo pretty frequently. I don't have a steady group here in town. So I play a lot of solo golf or just get paired up with whoever random is on the tee box at the time when I show up. And so the one time I did it, I played a solo round. I was the first guy out, and I played the entire round of golf in an hour and a half, 18 holes, like just flying down the course.
Just yourself?
Yeah, because I could get up to the tee, and I would hop on the board and fly down the fairway. I could park it right next to the green, go putt, get on the board again, and fly to the next hole and just go, 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 go. And I wasn't like I was trying to go fast. You know, I just played pretty well that day and kept it out of trouble and was just kind of hit the ball here, go to it, hit the ball here, go to it, and was just gone.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I just – it wasn't like there was an opportunity there that could have been like I was ignoring somebody else or okay. There was a group with me. I was solo on it.
Yeah. So with these types of travel on the golf course, do you see this as more of like a casualization of the game? Do you think that it pulls away from that traditional aspect? Ignoring the fact that at some point riding carts became a thing, and it was probably the same discussion.
Well, so we played a competitive round, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think we were playing competitively, meaning everyone was trying to play their best. Do you think, let me just ask you a question, I guess you generally leave it to the end of the forum to get a question asked, do you think that hurt your game at all?
Yeah, no, I don't. I think
I don't either.
Honestly, I think, I think, and especially in the conditions that we were playing in, maybe it becomes more of a personal or more intimate thing for yourself if you're playing against people who are maybe not taking it in the same light. But we were obviously out there to, you know, rag on each other and root each other on and see great shots get hit. So that ability to drive up to your ball and chat with you a bit before you hit, and then you hit anyway. And like, I'm not sure that I would have had that opportunity rolling in a cart, right? Because I would have had a different mentality. I would have felt like it was, you know, negatively impacting your process. But with the Finn Scooter, it felt like, well, we're kind of, you know, we're the Finn squad. We got to roll together. Right.
So I definitely could say that it felt more casual, meaning less uptight.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a good thing. Okay. It didn't take away from any of the respect that you could give the game. Mm-hmm. Nobody was driving it through bunkers. Nobody was running them on the greens, you know, anywhere that we hadn't been told that we could go. Right. But it definitely allowed us to a bit more freedom to get to places quicker and to have more fun, because there was definitely some added ham and egging and joking around that only came because we had those scooters. If we hadn't had those scooters, that percentage of conversation doesn't exist.
So do you think this kind of thing is going to continue to grow? Do you think this is going to expand and we're going to see different versions of, or is it just going to be that like resort style gimmicky, you know, try this thing out once and then go home kind of thing?
I hope it grows. I honestly do. There's definitely some things that there's questions, I guess you could say, application questions that could be answered that, you know, for example, we were kind of lucky that day that we played on relative cloud cover. We weren't being baked with those things that have, and we had a lot of trees for shade. There's some courses here in Reno where there's no trees around it. And if you're out there on an sunny afternoon, how is that going to factor in, right? So whether you don't have a whole lot of shade. So there's definitely some aspects, application aspects that I'm curious about, but I want to get one. I mean, I'm trying to figure out how I can afford to get one.
Right.
I thought about calling some of the courses here and seeing if they allow them, you know, do a little pre-check and say, hey, I own a Finn scooter. Do you guys allow those on your course? You know, and see what they say, because I don't know the answer to those. If I was to buy one and I show up to a course on one, are they going to be like, what the heck is that thing? Get it out of here.
Right.
So,
well, you gotta step up the get the governor off that thing if you want to roll up to a golf course in it.
Right, for sure.
Man, that's fun. Yeah, I think it's cool. I like that they're there. I'd love to see more courses do it. I also know that there's a certain level of competence that's required to navigate such a thing, and maybe it's not for everyone, and certainly not for those who are maybe fatigued easy or, you know, under any sort of pain. Obviously you got to lift the leg a bunch of times. Mm-hmm. But for those who are in good shape and, you know, just want to take a different experience, if you guys see it out there, I would love to hear your story about it. Whether it's in the comment section on our Twitter, or we have a big discussion going on THP, I would definitely love to know what you guys think of Finn scooter or anything like that, because I'm officially all in, man. If I see something unique like that at a golf course, as long as I don't have to pedal, I think I'm going to do it. I think I'm going to do it again.
Yeah, I would do it again. Definitely. I mean, it was fun. And if I'm there with a group, I'm going to try and convince other people to do it. Like, hey, get this thing. They're super fun. Just trust me. Try it. You're not going to hurt yourself. It's not that fast. Give it a couple holes before you start, you know, going full out, and you'll be fine.
You might not hurt yourself unless you're trying to take video on the cart path on day one, you know. Wash.
I wasn't there. I didn't see
it. It would happen. So I want to kind of go to in a different direction here. I don't know how much competitive golf you've really played, but I am curious. Regardless of how much it's been, what kind of partner for you is like the optimal guy? What is the guy, forget the level of skill, but what is the attribute you're most seeking out in a partner when you're playing in something competitive?
Somebody who's just steady mainly emotionally, that doesn't get too high or too low, doesn't get too down on themselves. 'Cause you know, we all hit bad shots.
No.
I saw Dan Edwards hit some bad shots.
I use the full name too. Must be true.
Canadan hit some bad shots.
Okay.
Not many, but a few. So somebody that can hit a bad shot and brush it off, or, you know, but is willing to cheer you on when you hit a good shot too, to recover and just have fun, and, you know, somebody that offsets your mistakes a little bit would be perfect. So if somebody has a really good short game, that's my guy. So I'll hit it down there, he hits it close, and we'll move on.
Okay. I want to also ask you about fitness and golf, because you had mentioned you do hit the gym a bit. I don't know how much that means, but you are, you look stronger than I do. So clearly, you know what you're doing over there. How much of an impact do you think that has on your game?
Quite a bit. I can tell my swing and my game suffers when I start slacking on going to the gym. I'm pretty regular. I usually go 3 or 4 times a week. I mean, I'm not the biggest and strongest and most in shape guy out there, but I do okay. And I can tell when I've, because of work or whatever reason, I've missed the gym for a few weeks. It definitely starts to hurt, you know. The recovery time is worse after you've played a round of golf. Your endurance through the round is worse. So like by 15, 16, 17, you start making bad swings or hitting the ball not as well as you would like to, because you're a little tired and you just haven't really realized it yet. And so definitely I see the benefits of going to the gym. Now, you don't have to go to the gym and be lifting massive amounts of weights, but being able to go to the gym and run on the treadmill a little bit, do some resistance training, I think that is good for anybody that wants to play golf. It can only help you if you keep it balanced.
So if you had to pick one element of a person's body that would be most critical to keep in shape for golf, what do you think it would be? We're talking like legs, core, arms, back. Most critical. It doesn't, I'm not saying do one and none of the others. I don't know.
Probably your legs, especially if you're going to be walking. You know, all your power comes from your legs.
Okay.
So if your legs get tired, then you start, you know, dumping early and slapping at the ball because you're not turning because your legs are tired. So probably legs.
Okay.
I mean, that's my unexpert opinion there, I guess.
Yeah. don't sign up for lessons from Cody here.
Yeah.
Cause he's kind of sort of not super sure, which is fine, I like that caveat there. The one other big thing I wanted to ask you about, you've just done an event with Mizuno, and it's not that you were unfamiliar with Mizuno prior to it. Obviously, I would say most people in this world who golf know Mizuno, know they make phenomenal product. Has anything about them changed now that you've gone through this experience?
For sure. I was actually thinking about Mizuno, about meeting Jeff Crawford and Chris Voschall there.
Two name dropping, I like it.
Two awesome guys. now two of my favorite people I've ever met. Super awesome, super nice. It's very easy to become a fanboy after meeting guys like that. Like, I'm gonna play Mizuno equipment for the rest of my life, kind of thing. Because they were just so cool. And you could tell talking to them and having a little bit of a gear and tech introduction from them, the amount of passion that they have for developing equipment and putting forth the very best equipment they could put out. And you can tell that they don't want to cut corners, that they don't want to do things cheaply, that they want to do it the best. And I'm sure that's across the board from every company. If you meet guys from every company, that you would get that same feeling from them. But that's who I've met, and that's who I was impressed by. So very cool, and definitely looking forward to seeing more out of Mizuno.
Yeah, we saw some things that we can't talk about, which is always fun. You get that sort of inside track on some of the new product coming out. And even stuff we've seen that you don't really have the tech detail on. Do you foresee the potential of Mizuno just kind of taking over the bag at this point? And I ask that not from the I'm a Mizuno homer aspect, but just from seeing and understanding the tech designs they have in the works.
Yeah, they have. I've always liked Mizuno. I've played Mizuno irons and wedges in the past. Mizuno has always been one that has always felt extremely high quality, even though they may have been a little. I'm not trying to bash them at anyone, but it just felt like they were a little maybe undermarketed or whatever. But it's always one that everybody knows. Mizuno makes a great forged club. Like nobody's ever. Does anybody ever say, "Oh, Mizuno clubs are no good"?
Someone like, might, but that's because they hit them bad. So right, what are you gonna do?
Right, but very rarely do you hear anybody say, "Well, I don't like Mizuno." Like you can hear people say that about other companies. I mean, I've heard of people say, "Oh, I don't like this company," but they never really say that about Mizuno. Usually, they say, "Oh, Mizuno, that's for like the really good golfers."
Yeah,
and that's their image of them is that's for the tour pros. Tour pros play Mizuno. I can't play Mizuno.
Yeah. So it's been fun watching the transition because we always knew MP was a superior product. It was the upper echelon of, you know, basically the professional style player iron. It's been a lot of fun watching JPX come along and Chromoly and take over from an excitement standpoint because they're including all this additional technology into it. I think one of the big kickers for me this year, Cody, has been that I've played Mizuno driver for the majority of the year, and for the first time in ever, and I've played a number of them back when they were blue. I played them back then too, and I think they scared people because they were pretty low spin. But the new ones that are out here right now, STX is in the bag now, something a little bit different, but it's really fun to hand that over to someone else for them to hit it and go, "Whoa, damn, look at this thing go." And then they go immediately buy one for themselves. I mean, that to me is the most telling thing about a company. And I feel like that's happening for Mizuno right now, something they haven't had yet in the other spaces in their lineup. But it's always been irons.
It's always been irons, right.
From the MP side. But yeah, I mean, now it's this like pride thing that the driver sounds great. It goes like hell.
Right.
And you know, they're starting to like fill out that lineup. The only thing I really need now is a challenger in that three iron spot because it's turning into a driver. So we'll just sit here and I guess wait and hope, you know?
Yep. Yeah. Mizuno has become in the last few years a very relevant company for every part of the bag from driver to ball. And we played the ball and their ball is really good. If you go to a store and want to get fit and you don't try a Mizuno product at every step of the bag, you're missing out on an opportunity for something that's really good. And I'm not saying that Mizuno makes the best driver because it's hard to say what's best, but it's a really good driver and hitting it this weekend, it was a really good driver. Like,
yeah.
There's nothing about it. I mean, it's fast. It's you know, your internet golfer again loves low spin and low launch.
And that sound, right?
And the sound that is muted and solid and all of that. Well, go check out a Mizuno driver.
There you go. Well, my friend, you've made it to the end of the episode. It's super fun to have you on today. I do a segment at the end of my shows, and I think you know I do. Mm-hmm. Where I invite my guests to ask me any question they want on the spot. Do you have anything for me today?
I do.
Oh, geez.
When are you coming to play some mountain golf at altitude?
That is a good question. I mean, it's got to be soon, right?
Yeah.
We'll get J-Man on the horn and find a place with Finn Scooters and just have at it. I'll tell you what, man. I'm excited to play at Elevation. I haven't done it. I'm a little bit scared, but we need to find some firm fairways so I can get some real internet numbers down for Twitter at least.
Yep. Yeah. We got like, that's a 480 yard drive.
Yeah. Mark it down.
Three iron.
Mark it down.
Yep.
Cool. Is that it? Or you have anything else?
No, that's it. It was an awesome time this weekend. Thanks for having me on.
Of course, buddy. Anyone who's planning to play some golf this weekend, make sure you have a good time. Don't take it too seriously. I know I'm not, even though I'm playing a couple times. And the driver is still very much a work in progress. We will talk next week. Cody, thanks, man. See everyone next week.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.